Welcome to University Drive, your pathway to the transformational work of University of the Bahamas. Our goal is to build a better Bahamas by shaping tomorrow's leaders today, finding solutions to challenges, and forging new opportunities for growth. University Drive, where faculty, staff, students, and alumni travel the road of progress together with you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to University Drive. I'm your host, Tamika Lundy. It's the economy. What else? U.S. voters made that resoundingly clear in recent elections. With rising costs but salaries that don't really keep pace, the same thoughts prevail in the minds of Bahamians. So that's why a groundbreaking study on the cost of middle-class life in the Bahamas is so striking. It really has some thought-provoking findings. Joining us for this episode is Lesvie Archer, the researcher behind this study. Lesvie is a policy fellow at the Government and Public Policy Institute at UB. Lesvie, thanks so much for joining us back here on University Drive.
It is always a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This research provides timely insight that not only sparks conversation, but can also help to shape future policies, I'd say. I'd like to explore what it really means to live in the middle class here in the Bahamas and how these findings can influence everything from family planning to career choices and even our collective hopes for economic growth. So let's dive right in. Firstly, I'd like to briefly share some of the findings of the research for context. The study focuses on expenses for families in New Providence and Grand Bahama. The research shows that a family of four in New Providence needs approximately $10,200 per month, while that same family of four living in Grand Bahama would need $10,100 per month. Also, the figures reflect a 53% and 104% increase over estimates for lower income families. Walk us through, firstly, what motivated this study on the cost of middle class living in the Bahamas, and then why is it important to explore this beyond low income statistics?
Thank you so much for that question. Yes, this study was motivated. Well, like you said, there's always talk about cost of living. You know, it's a conversation in every country we go to, and everyone, it's something that's on your mind, especially if you're lower income or middle class, however you would choose to characterize that. And having done the living wages study a few years ago, there was an opportunity to extend the benchmarks and find out, well, what is the cost of living for middle class? As in, how much does it cost to obtain certain status symbols associated with being middle class in the Bahamas, like living in a certain area or shopping in a certain area, having my kids attend private school? How much does all that cost? That was a strong motivator for the study. And also, in terms of quality of life issues, I had received some information about a family and a legal situation where the person was the primary provider and he lost his life. And there was an opportunity to make amends to the family, but there could be no exact cost. The court didn't know, you know, what was the value of his contribution, what was the value in the Bahamas of the contribution. And so there was an opportunity for this research. And after assisting in that way, I realized, okay, maybe this research needs to be made public so that maybe if anybody else is in this situation, in terms of quality of life matters, it could prove helpful to them.
Awesome and very good context. So take us through your methodology. How did you collect this data?
So the data was collected, like I said, the study is an outgrowth of the Living Wages Survey. So it adopted the same or similar methodology. And when I say that, there was a fieldwork area. I used the outskirts of New Providence, and then with Grand Bahama, I used the same area as with the Living Wages Study, because the damage from Hurricane Dorian really made investigating the other areas challenging. So once we had the areas established, I said, well, that would cover everywhere from West Bay Street straight down to Yamacraw. I covered apartments in Tropical Gardens, Cable Beach, Twynham Heights. I have Gleniston Gardens in Eastern New Providence to get the cost of housing. So I looked for advertisements for rental for a two-bedroom house furnished. Now, a two-bedroom house was used because I used a reference family of four persons, two adults and two children, so a family of four, because this is following the methodology's recommendation. So the middle class here starts off with a family structure of two adults and two children. The average rental prices were collected, and to that, bang on the average cost of utilities for a two-bedroom, a reasonably sized two-bedroom house, utilities that included the electricity, water, et cetera. And that formed the cost of housing and utilities. And it, you can see in the study, that's around $1,500 a month plus $500 for utilities, so $2,000. So living costs would be $2,000, $15 for the rent plus $5 for utilities a month. We also did food stores, so the grocery stores where you shop. The meal plan was created by a nutritionist. It's the same meal plan used for the previous study for the working class population, and it's just different stores and check. And so that cost, and also in speaking of middle class life, in the working class study, I did not include the cost of eating out, because if you're working class, the principle is that you should be eating at home because it's more affordable to buy in bulk and prepare your meals at home. But with the middle class, I included eating out in it. And so that estimate for grocery and eating out for a family of four was then added to the figure, to the housing estimate. And then it was non-food, non-housing costs. So everything else, that includes transportation, clothing, footwear, recreation, healthcare, education, communication, anything you need to buy, live from paying your car insurance, all of that was included. For getting your car license, everything, gas, your phone bill, that estimated for a family of four around $4,200 a month in New Providence and $4,400 in Grand Bahama. Now that information was estimated based upon secondary studies. So like I said, with food and housing, I went into these areas. With the non-food, non-housing, this was calculated using information from the government. The housing expenditure survey, their percentages were used to understand how Bahamians in a certain percentile or residents in a certain percentile spend their funds. And then to that, savings was added. The Central Bank of the Bahamas recommends that Bahamians save 25% of their income, and they broke it down into 5% pension, 10% emergency savings, and 10% for tithes or charity. You know, go to church, or if you like to help your family and friends or whatever. However, in the study, I only used 20%. I just tried to be conservative. So when all of that comes together, that is a little under $10,000. That's around $95.50 in New Providence and $94.50 in Grand Bahama. And then inflation, because this data was actually collected a few years ago. But like I said, in feeling pressed after I realized that this could help other people in their situations, I had to add the cost of inflation over the years, and that's what raised it to the 10 grand figure that we have.
Okay, you said a lot. I think, though, that we should go back and just establish some definitions so we can understand exactly what we're saying when we use certain terms. So in terms of working class, what is the definition for working class? What is the definition for middle class? And then what is the definition for living wage? So let's start with working class. What do we mean when we say that within a Bahamian context?
Well, I can tell you what I mean when I use it in the context of the study. And that basically referred to minimum wage earners. So that would be the starting. And there are persons who are below the minimum wage, but that those persons were not committed or included in the study or considered. So working class would be persons who are working legally and earning the legal minimum amount. Some persons may refer to this group as lower class, but the term is fluid in terms of if you want to describe lower or middle or upper class figures with that.
Is that class also what some people refer to as working poor? Or is that subjective?
So the working poor may be persons who are working and still at the poverty line at or below, but it would be sort of, let me connect it to the living wages. The living wages was developed under the philosophy that, or under the belief that if you work, you have a right to live a decent life, right? So if you work, you should be able to live a decent lifestyle. So it's an idea that people who work shouldn't be in poverty. People who work but still fall below the poverty line. But the idea of having a minimum wage, that whole understanding is that you should be earning a wage that can help you stay out of poverty. So it's two different groups. Now, the realities of it, to what extent can a minimum wage keep you away from the poverty line? Like, that's a whole other conversation. That's a whole different conversation. But a livable wage is considered to be the least amount possible for you to live a decent but basic life in whatever area. And for us, it would be the Bahamas. So what is the minimum cost? And when I said decent but basic, it includes values that the culture or the area being investigated would have. So for example, if people would generally go to the movies, it would include that cost. It wouldn't include the cost of just eating and having a bed to sleep and going to work, because that's not really living, some would say, like to be human, embracing all aspects of human, of being human, is what a livable wages is about. And to do it because you have an income that can sustain you to be a part of the culture that you live in. And when it comes to middle class now, there's no consensus on what it means to be middle class, just like some might argue, you know, what is lower class. Some people say the middle class should be determined by their income, persons who earn a certain amount. Other persons say, you know, you can't really determine middle class by their income because some people have middle class symbols or status symbols. They live in a certain way or in a certain area, but saying that they fund it directly from their income may not necessarily be true. So income may not necessarily be an indicator of what it is to be middle class. And also studying how much one makes is different from studying the lifestyle that one lives. You know what I mean? So we can't really say, or there's sufficient opposition to say middle class depends on the salary that you earn. There are other researchers that say middle class should be based upon ethnic homogeneity. That means the population that has the same ethnicity, the majority of the population that represents middle class. So in the Bahamas, the lower deciles or the groups that are the lowest in poverty, they tend to be overpopulated with migrants. And in the Bahamas, the upper groups, 9 and 10, the highest income earners, they tend to be overpopulated with migrants as well. So this researcher would say everything else, everybody else in the middle would be considered middle class. You know, so that's another way to look at it. Other scholars say that they say that middle class is defined by possession of a steady job a steady, well-paying job. So if you have a steady, well-paying job, you'll be considered middle class. To that end, a lot of minimum wage workers would be considered middle class because they are recipients of a steady, well-paying job. The fourth definition of middle class that was outlined in the study is the understanding that it is a group of persons who just live the same lifestyle, enjoy the same things, tend to be around the same environments, and have similar influences. So just a group of people. Now, this study characterized middle class by more or less guided on the last point. Certain symbols, living in a certain area, getting your food from a certain place, educating your children in a certain way, those particular preferences were examined. The cost of maintaining those preferences were assessed. And that is how middle class was constructed in this study.
All right, very informative. Thank you so much for that clarification. So comparatively speaking, the scope of your study was based on middle-income families in New Providence and Grand Bahama. Do you anticipate or do you think that the cost would be that much more different in other islands in the Bahamas?
So the research, like you said, the research covered New Providence and Grand Bahama. And it would be very interesting to find out the living wage rates or the cost of living on the other islands. That would require separate research and additional research. And I'm definitely looking forward to an opportunity to do that one day.
All right. We're looking forward to getting the answers. The study that which focuses on middle class life for the lifestyle in New Providence is more than double that of the lower income estimates. What are some of the specific factors that drive those costs up again? If you've said it, then just restate that for us so that we can kind of focus on what are the distinctions and what are the factors that are driving the cost differences up for these two classes.
Well, housing definitely plays a big role. So for urban areas, when our team went into urban neighborhoods or in inner city neighborhoods, we were able to find affordable, decent, in fact, beautiful two-bedroom houses with furniture for $400, right? I saw a beautiful two-bedroom home in Mason's Addition that was $400 a month, and then plus the cost of utilities. And for her family, I think that only brought her up to around $650. And so that compared to housing in, let's say, Stapleton for a two-bedroom, West Bay Street, Cable Beach for a two-bedroom, Yamacraw, Little Blair, it won't be $400 for a two-bedroom. You're not going to find that. And so that's substantially much more. That right there is more than triple the price alone, just when you look at housing. So housing played a factor. And then, like I mentioned earlier, where you shop matters, where you decide to go to the store to buy grocery matters. And then the third point is recognition that once people have more, they tend to spend more. So you may tend to spend more money just because you have it on certain aspects, because you have it. Pretty much. And then also savings. So working class, where their saving estimates was between 9% and 10%, say that. But for, like I said, for the middle class, I added 20% savings, and that's still below central bank. Central bank recommends that Bahamians save 25%. So that savings rate. So this is a middle class lifestyle, not in debt, not using debt to fund it. Those are the main differences.
Okay, this study area is also fascinating for me, particularly now as we are living in the era that we are living in and the cost of living rising for me, what I believe is so sharply. Stay tuned as we continue our conversation on the real costs of middle-class life in the Bahamas. Our guest is Leslie Archer. We'll take this break and be back after this.
Chapter One Bookstore is proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our copy center for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael H. Eldon Complex on University Drive. Shop with us on Monday through Saturday. You can contact us at 397-2650 or email at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. Chapter One, the premier choice.
Are you ready to take your knowledge or career to new heights? Don't wait to invest in your future. Do it now. How? Earn a professional development certificate from University of the Bahamas. Whether you're looking to enhance your leadership abilities, sharpen your technical skills, or explore a new field entirely, our Continuing Education and Lifelong Learning Center has the ideal course for you. We offer single-phase electrical, ethics in procurement, accounting for entrepreneurship, stop managing, start leading, dynamic presentations, digital marketing, superior customer service, and justice of the peace. We even have courses on smartphone photography, TikTok videos, defensive driving, and interacting with difficult people. Or open the door to new languages with English as a second language, conversational Chinese, and Spanish in the workplace. Our instructors are experts in their fields and they are here to support you every step of the way. Call us at 302-4449. Enroll today.
Here on University Drive, we are talking about the cost of middle class living in the Bahamas with our guest, Les V. Archer, who has researched this subject matter and has just published new research in the International Journal of Bahamian Studies, which is the research publication for University of the Bahamas. Les V., there's this popular notion that the middle class, is the backbone of society. How do you see these findings impacting, let's say, policy decisions around things like wages and education and economic development in the Bahamas?
Yes, that's a very good question. The middle class is theorized as the backbone of society in part because of their contributions to the economy. For example, middle-class persons are more likely to have private health insurance, to purchase life insurance, to use the private school system. And so this is money that's actually being pumped directly back into the economy. So the more persons that you have that are part of the middle class, these are symbols and securities in life. They want them and they're going to take their money and invest it right back in. So that is one way in which we see the middle class as a community as being foundational to society and society development, and which is why it is important to safeguard or grow or build this class up. Now, in terms of policies with wages, the thing is, you know, living wages is also a private concept. It's a volunteer concept, really, for companies to choose to embrace, and something that they can promote that they embrace. So I'm not sure. It would be very interesting to see what implications this may lead to in terms of public policy and wages. What I do believe is eye-opening, especially for youth, is to understand the dynamics of if they are aspiring for a certain lifestyle, to understand that this is a practical example of what this lifestyle may cost. And that may lead to some deciding to choose certain careers over others, more investigation and research. And that may actually have implications on the country in terms of what is needed versus what people what the economy needs and what the government say we need more of versus what people say, well, this is what I need to pursue because I want this certain or this particular lifestyle. So I think for youth, especially, it may be a tool for financial planning and for career planning. Also in terms of public policy, like I said, quality of life issues, when it comes to loss of a spouse or loss of a breadwinner, to understand the cost or another source of understanding cost or the implications of it, if that does need to be calculated or if some compensation does need to be made on any part, this information could be useful for that.
You know what that tells me? That tells me that perhaps the conversations around the dinner table need to be a little bit more intentional and deliberate and strategic, right? Particularly in light of information that's being shared in this research study and others. When you think about career planning and financial planning, you might also probably want to be thinking long-term about insurance and things like pension and really planning strategically for those kinds of things, especially if children want a lifestyle that is not so much mired in struggle, right?
Right. And you know what the research says about middle class in terms of understanding their culture and preferences? That once parents reach a certain standard, it is very difficult for children to choose to go lower than that standard. And the example that was given in the research and that I use is education. Your parents may have attended private school where it cost your grandmother maybe $30 a month. And now your parent might have sent you to that same school and the school fee may be a couple of $100 a month. And now you feel that you have to send your child to the same school, private school, or higher ranked private school or a more costly higher school, private school, which is, the price has increased, you know, and wages don't necessarily increase with inflation over the years. So, but you, there's still this pressure to maintain this standard that the persons that went before you strove so hard to achieve. You need to maintain it, if not enhance it. And so that is a pressure associated with being middle class that must be considered as well when calculating the numbers, and especially, like you said, when children or young persons are planning or thinking about planning what type of lifestyle they either want to maintain or advance, or what will they really and truly be willing to sacrifice.
So true, so true. There is a chart in your research paper that is headlined Consumption Expenditure Comparisons that I find interesting. It's comparisons between the working class and the middle class when it comes to food, housing, and utilities, non-food, non-housing, and savings. Is there anything in there that was particularly surprising for you? Walk us through that.
Yes, definitely. I immediately go to the housing percentages. Because if you see, what is the housing percentage for the working class in New Providence? It's 15%, mm-hmm. right? And however, the working class percentage for housing, the middle class, the percentage of money spent on housing for the middle class increases 21. to 21%.
Yeah.
That suggests, according to the research, that housing is becoming more unaffordable for middle class families. Because you would expect that if you're earning more, so you're not in a working class bracket, but you're in a middle class bracket, or you have certain lifestyle accesses, like to live in a certain area, that it shouldn't take a greater amount of your salary to pay for it. Like, for example, let's make this practical. If you decide to buy lunch and it costs $5, right? If you're a working class person, minimum wage is only a little bit more than that. So that takes up a whole, really, you would have to work an hour to be able to pay for that one lunch. But someone who may be earning a lot more, that same $5, that wouldn't be their whole hour's value of work. If you're making like $20 an hour, you understand what I mean? So the percentage of it would be less. That $5 right. would be a lower percentage.
Right.
So what you expect is that if you're earning more, the amount that you spend on housing would be less. Even if it's more money, it would be a lower percentage because you're earning more. But that doesn't seem to be the case. It seems that rental, the amount that persons are paying, they have to spend more on it, which means that housing may be unaffordable or is becoming less affordable for them.
This is very insightful and offers a lot of information that can be used when you think about long-term planning for the country and a national development plan and the areas of focus, wouldn't you say?
I definitely think so. I think in terms of the national development plan, yes, it gives, this would be a good indicator to use in terms of reality of the costs. What can we do? What part of the plan can help reduce costs? What part of the plan can help strengthen equality so that there's less of a distinction? Like, why does a working class person have to increase their salary or their income by hundreds of percent of percentages more to live a middle class life? You know, there are sufficient research publications that indicate that while the Bahamas has a high standard of living, it also has a high level of inequality. So in looking at national development, I believe there may be an opportunity to use it to help better understand equality and access. And then also, if you think about it, people choose to live in certain areas, not just because, let's say, their friends or family or they like how it looks, but also for safety, right? For walkability and certain comforts that may be connected to a better health. So do you have to pay for that? You know, are we saying that you have to pay to live in an environment that is more healthy? You have to pay to live in an environment where you can feel safe walking? You know, so these are questions that will eventually demand answers.
All very relevant questions indeed. What are the next steps, or I should say, are there next steps for you in terms of developing a more comprehensive picture of middle-class living in the Bahamas?
I have no immediate next steps besides trying to make it more relevant to persons. So right now you have the publication, but not really everyone is going to read it. And then to pay attention to the nuances in it, so making it more palatable to the community is on the agenda, maybe. but I'm hoping this work will inspire others to do research as well in the topic on cost of living, and to see that within the next few years, we have a wealth of research on the subject.
It's always good to develop new knowledge, and not only to develop it, but then make sure that it's being shared and understood. You touched on nuances in terms of the findings. What other things should we focus on? What other things that might have been surprising for you or interesting or not interesting, but it's documented? What are some other things that you can touch on?
Honestly, the most surprising thing has been the feedback to this study. That has been surprising for me, like very surprising, because what was documented was based upon research. So it reflects the reality of some persons in the Bahamas, right? But what I realized in speaking with persons is that it touched a bone to the extent that if I'm not middle class, what are you calling me? Do you know what I mean? Are you saying that I'm lower class? And what does lower class mean?
And that for some people is a reality that they are not willing to embrace and have true conversations about.
Right, and again, it may not even be a reality. Middle class is a construct. It's a construct, and you know, I try to, in following the methodology, construct this construct without using references to debt, right? Or taking out loans, et cetera, and which may also give people a real look at how much it costs to live in the Bahamas. You know, and I saw another feedback saying it's publications like this that make it hard to sell our country because it shows that cost of living is high and this isn't the reality of many persons. And you know what? The research shows that this is the reality of some persons in the Bahamas. And truth be told, some people can afford this lifestyle in the Bahamas. Some Bahamians can. They are living this lifestyle. Some, you know, someone who have two kids, both of them go to private school. They live on the outskirts. I did straight from Coral Harbor down to Yamacore. You know, they live there on the outskirts of the island. We don't may not know exactly what their savings are. But every time you go out west, you see them in the store, or go out east, you see them in the store, in the shopping environment. And this is just how much that lifestyle costs. Plus savings. That's it. Savings is what? Tithes, 5% for pension, and then 10% for charity. I mean, for actual savings. It's just a look into the life that some people are living that they may not tell themselves.
So you are an expert. You've done the living wages study, and you've done now the study on the middle class living, right?
Yes.
What are the factors, or it could be what's the single factor, but what are the factors that would lift a person out of lower income living into the middle class? If I want to move from one class to the other, what are the factors, what are the things, or what is the factor that I would need to master or overcome in order to do that? Outside of, I mean, ultimately it'll be you earn more, but what's the enabling factors to feed that? Is it education?
That's a good question. The research, I will point to the research. The research speaks to exactly what you said. It says, in terms of when I did the working class study on livable wages, it said that most people maintain their lifestyle by having at least two jobs. That is one thing that the research points to. So I guess that speaks to earning more. And then the other aspect would be, like, you know, would be to reduce expenses, to cut off some things. You know, I found the cost of attending putting two children in private school from kindergarten, from K-5 to grade 12. And it started off at 100-something thousand for the two kids, right? So if you think about it this way, you could put your kids in government school and have that amount saved. If you put it in a mutual fund or some other high earning savings account. But you may find that some persons don't want to do that. They'll say, you're looking at the 100-something thousand, but I'm looking at my child A, B, C, D, E, F, G, which is why I have them in this private school, and I'm willing to make that sacrifice. You know, you have some people saying, yes, I know the food, this particular food costs $1.50 more in this particular store, but this store cleaner, so I like to go here. And sometimes I see people here that I know, so I prefer to go to this store instead of that store, you know. So those are personal things. On a policy level, you know, there are ways, more examination needs to be done in terms of costs. You know, the methodology recommends focusing on farmers markets to buy fresh produce, sourcing from local farmers, which are theorized to be more affordable. So, I mean, there are lots of conversations that could be had about trying to figure out how to fit into the lifestyle that one wants through personal changes or public policy advocacy.
When did you collect the data for this study? I'm asking because when I think about huge factors like Hurricane Dorian and COVID-19, what people were able to earn pre and post, and the extent to which that impacts the data that you gather during the time that you gathered it. Was that a factor?
Yes, definitely, definitely, definitely. First of all, especially in Grand Bahama, because there was only one area that we could actually survey, and there are only a few stores in that area alone as well. So that was a limitation.
What area was well. That?
In Freeport, the areas that we covered were, let me just tell you right now, West End, 8 Mile Rock, and Freeport proper. Mm-hmm. So that was the focus in Grand Bahama.
And so how did factors like successive hurricanes, not even only Dorian, but successive hurricanes and the pandemic impact what you got on the ground, particularly in Grand Bahama?
Well, housing. Because of Hurricane Dorian, there was already a shortage of housing. And because the study focused on rental units, there was just higher costs. There were higher costs to pay rent. When we went in for the living wages survey, it was right after Dorian. And so your price differences, that's when peanuts was $2. Some people were charging peanuts for $2 in Freeport. And so those realities were captured on the paper. And I think they do house value for history as well. Do you know what I mean? They hold value for history. And so those costs, and then like you said as well, the pandemic, the prices were affected by the pandemic, and those costs, and inflation was affected by the pandemic. So those costs were calculated into as well, because that was the reality of what persons living in the fieldwork areas were facing. And that is what the study sought to capture. What was the reality of the costs of living a decent but basic lifestyle in the Bahamas? Mm-hmm.
What are your hopes for how this information will ultimately be used to make the biggest impact?
I do my best. I don't I try not to focus on impact. I try to focus on doing good research and then putting it out there for it to take on whatever form and shape it may need to take on. That is my job. That is what I see my job as a researcher. I don't hold myself responsible for its impact. I will leave that into the hands of the public and the hands of the policymakers. I just try to ensure that the science is correct, the science behind it. Is correct.
Okay, you wrote in your research that the study may be a starting point for informing policies related to living costs and standards in the Bahamas, and that it offers insight into economic loss associated with quality of life debates. Can you take us further into that?
When I talk about economic loss and quality of life debate, remember what I mentioned at the start as in to what motivated me to pursue this study? And it was because there was a legal situation where the court needed to understand quality of life and cost of living in the Bahamas in order to make their judgment on the ruling of as to how much the defendant would have had to pay this family. And the Bahamas government did not have or make easily accessible this information. So they got in contact with me and asked for help. It was the motivator, and I guess you're right. You're right. I guess I do focus on impact in that way, in going through the peer review process, in ensuring that I had my ethics certification or ethics approval to do this study, that it adds to the quality and the quantity of research and information and knowledge that is available about the Bahamas to Bahamians and others that influence decisions, policy, and otherwise. So thank you.
I'm wondering about the connect or the intersection of this research and another one that you did that I also found so informative, which is the research you did on culture and values, Bahamian culture and values, and a survey like this. Is there an intersection between the two of those?
Yes, there are definitely intersections. I would say stay tuned. In terms of gender relationships and gender values, who desires these symbols and how? For example, the study, one of the recent findings is that younger women prefer home ownership, you know, over younger men. What kind of implications could that possibly mean? And I focus on renting, so that actually may have implications towards renting as well, in terms of owning a triplex or owning a duplex. Is this a gender issue? Do we actually have any research or any data stating the genders of homeowners, of multi-homeowners? You know, there's a lot that could be unpacked through this research. Stay tuned.
Okay, that is an excellent note to end on. What does it cost to be middle class in the Bahamas? We've been speaking with researcher Lesbi Archer of the Government and Public Policy Institute at University of the Bahamas. New research that's come out and is published in the International Journal of Bahamian Studies, which you can access and read fully on the UB website at www.ub.edu.bs. Hover on the research tab and click on the International Journal of Bahamian Studies. Lesbi, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Bahamas, for listening. Thank you, UB, for just being awesome.
All right. We will connect with you at another time in the future. I've been your host, Tamika Lundy. You've been listening to University Drive. We'll be back next week, same time, same station. Take care.
University Drive is a production of the Office of University Relations at University of the Bahamas. All rights reserved.